So we have Neil Fox, leads the SoftServe consulting and technical solutions team and strategy, as well as ensuring optimization of clients' engagements at SoftServe. He brings more than 30 years of technology leadership to the company. Neil has served in many of the roles SoftServe's clients fill today, including Chief Information Officer, Software Development Vice President, CEO, and COO of companies including TRW, Macromedia, Management Recruiters International, PeopleFlow, Lawson Software, and Red Hat. Neil is also a serial entrepreneur, having founded three startups in his career. Please welcome Neil to the Cloud Developer Summit and Expo.
Good. I want to thank you diehards for sticking around here. This is it, last session, so we'll try to make it as fun and entertaining and interesting as we can. So let's start with a little bit of a flashback here. You guys look like you have some gray hair, been around a little bit. I just want to think back a little bit for what life was like before the web.
Here, how about this? It was on mute, just like my phone. So let's think about what life was like in 1994 before the web. That was our cell phone. That was our laptop. That was our video game system. Those were our TVs. And that was the internet. All right, dial-up, AOL. Pretty horrible life, but we didn't know it at the time. But things have changed so dramatically that it's hard to remember what our daily lives were like without today's modern conveniences and without access to the internet. But you know, even revolutions take time, right? So it's taken since 1994 to about 2010, 2012. This is a chart of the number of internet users per 100. So by developing country, developed countries, and the world globally. So it still has a long way to go, right? Only 40% of the world today is internet connected. 77% of the developed world. So it still takes a while to get where we're going. We think of, thank you very much. How embarrassing, it's my phone. I apologize. That it wasn't muted, right?
Usually, hit the red button, it turns off.
Usually it does. I apologize. Thanks. Oh, good. I'm going to draw some parallels between the adoption of big data and what life will be like maybe 10 or 20 years from now and the use of the internet. Because in my opinion, and I don't think I'm alone here, big data and data analytics will change our lives as dramatically as the internet did, perhaps even more so. And the adoption, the curve is really hard to predict, right? There's a lot of complexity in big data and data analytics that will slow the adoption, but there's a lot of there's a lot of ROI and a lot of potential, so that's going to speed adoption, and a lot of the infrastructure has already been laid, right? Unlike the internet where, you know, getting broadband to the home and the last mile problem was a big problem to solve. So we think of big analytics, which is a term that we use most often for the intersection of big data, which we think of as all the technology that drives the collection and the management of, you know, massive amounts of data, petabytes, exabytes of data, and data science, right? Data science being the use and the analytics and the real work that goes into the analysis of all that data, ideally in real time, but not necessarily. And so the intersection there we can call big analytics. This is a type of technology that's used by, you know, all the big players out there. Amazon, we heard from today, Google as well, Facebook and others that are using this technology to drive the next generation of the user experience and activities and analysis in their business. So let's think for a minute about the value proposition. I just pulled a few examples that I think are worthwhile talking about. Public safety Durham, North Carolina police using predictive analytics to reduce crime by 50% in their town. Durham happens to be a town that I'm very familiar with. It's one town north of where I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it used to be a pretty crime-ridden place, but using predictive analytics to figure out where crime is going to occur, by when and whom, they're able to significantly reduce that. Insurance companies use predictive analytics to save lots of millions of dollars. Supply chain optimization, retailers using predictive analytics to forecast product demand, price, promotion, inventory management. Healthcare, probably one of my favorite examples of using big analytics to save lives. And I'll talk about some others here in a minute, but if you think about the way that we're starting to use sensors and applications like MyFitnessPal and Voom and others to monitor our diet intake, to monitor our exercise, to monitor our calorie intake, et cetera, and use some analysis in order to tell us whether we're eating too much or exercising too little, which is always the case in my case. And then retail, right? Macy's boosting same store sales by 10% using tens of millions of data points from Twitter, social media, in-store and online. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with this concept of the omni-channel. It's another way of thinking about a 360-degree view of the customer, where companies like Macy's and lots of retailers and other organizations are trying to track you as an individual from when you're on a phone in the web browser, when you go to the web browser at home, when you go on the phone and you go into the store, right? Those are all disconnected today points of entry. And in order to close the loop there, companies are investing a lot of money in trying to connect that what they call the omni-channel, the entire multi-channel universe of your interaction with an organization. It takes CRM to a very high degree, the next level. There's an interesting program that we've been involved with here where in crawling through data, they're allowed, one of the companies that we work with is assigning a pregnancy score to a shopper. This is another kind of example of that omni-channel, right? If somebody's shopping for various items that are related to pregnancy, they're scoring an individual to say, you know, is this person pregnant or not, so that we can target them appropriately with the right materials, the right opportunities to buy products that they would be interested in. This is going on a lot and a lot more now. In federal and state government, there's lots of opportunity there. I want to talk about the Durkheim project quickly. There was a lot of chatter this morning about the use of the cloud in the government. Thankfully, proudly, hired the gentleman who's responsible for the Durkheim project, who was leading this for several years. The Durkheim project is a pretty important project that's designed to do a risk assessment of suicide based on returning veterans from the Iraq and Afghan wars. This is data that is opted in, but collected from social media. So if you're a soldier returning from Afghanistan, you have the opportunity to opt into this project, and your tweets and your Facebook pages and Instagrams and all that are essentially analyzed for potential suicide threat, suicide risk. Very, very interesting project. Lots of organizations, including Fast Company, said this is the most vital use of big data that we've ever seen. So Chris Poulin, who is running that project and still runs it, works for SoftServe now, running our big data analytics. So if there's all this opportunity, right, if there's all this opportunity to customize the retail experience, the shopping experience, to save lives and reduce crime and improve your health and longevity and all of that, you know, why aren't we there yet, right? Why does adoption take a while? And there's lots of reasons here, and we'll talk about a few of them. One of them is resistance to change. You know, I think unlike the internet, if you guys remember when the internet first started coming about, 94, 95, 96, there were those out there that said this is a fad. Right? It's not going to last. It's like CB. Somebody, I remember hearing people say, comparing it to CB radio. Yeah, it's a CB radio of dial-up. You know, who's going to really use the internet? Like, really? That's pretty amazing. Thankfully, nobody's saying that about big data. Nobody's really saying it's a fad. You know, there's people that really do see the value out there, but it is a massive change, not just on the technology side, which it really is. If you think about your database administrators and various organizations, they have to think very differently. But it also impacts a lot of different areas of the company. If you remember, and if you were fortunate enough to be in an enterprise when the web came about, you know, who ran those projects? The IT group did, right? Some geek who taught himself HTML, put up a website, right? And that's where the internet kind of started, right? It started in the IT group, it started in R&D. And then eventually marketing got involved and the business got involved and they put real business drivers behind it. Well, the same thing's happening in big data, right? Today it is driven by the CIO, it's driven by, you know, other parts of the organization. Other parts of the IT organization, but at some point very soon, in fact, even now, you're seeing more of the business get involved, right? The chief marketing officer and the salespeople and other parts of the company want to get the information out of this. So the question is, how quickly can they push the IT group in order to get the data both collected, normalized, validated, and then analyzed? But we think that there are three significant challenges to big data adoption. If we think about, let's see here, I think there's a laser pointer here. There is. A lot of it is about system performance, right? How do we, for the data scientist and data discovery, get data into the system, right? What data is it that we're looking at? Is it data that we collect via our online system? Is it data that's out there on the internet that we want to scrape? Is it data from our partners? Right, from our suppliers, from our vendors. How do we get the data in and manage the performance there? How do we manage and achieve a low latency so that we can get real-time data to our clients or to our customers? Right? If we're providing self-service and we're providing insights to our customers like Amazon does, like Netflix does, like Facebook to some degree, certainly Google, how do we ensure that we're achieving the low latency required there? And then how do we implement self-service over terabytes and petabytes of data, right? Huge amounts of data. How do we manage that in an efficient way in order to provide, you know, real-time usage for both internal and external consumers, stakeholders? So it is a very complicated environment. If you look at all the different components here, you have lots of vertical tools and lots of vertical applications from every major and lots of minor vendors. We believe that the underlying technologies that are relied upon and useful and leveraged for managing the large amounts of data in low latency are a good place to start. But then once you start there, the complexity ramps up pretty quickly and can impact the adoption rate, right? So some of the technologies that we think are critical and useful, certainly Hadoop, are a Vertical Spark, Tableau, Qlik, HBase, Cassandra, all play a major role. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of these technologies. And we think about Hadoop, the adoption rate is pretty low, but those who are using Hadoop in a real-life environment, they're running analytics and business intelligence, and very little for archiving, mostly for analytics and business intelligence. Very good to see that. But this is interesting, right? The adoption is still behind. If you think about how many people are running Hadoop in production, it's very small today, right? I think about the early part of the curve on web adoption. It's just those people who are testing the waters, right? The IT group is doing a trial run. They're maybe extracting some data from their CRM system, putting it into a cluster or some other financial transaction system. Lots of people considering it, right? So if we look at this group here, you're talking maybe 40% of the folks responding to this, which took place earlier this year, the survey. And then other folks are, just not quite there yet, and it's going to be some time before they get there. There are some really interesting architectures to adopt in order to manage and provide and overcome some of those challenges that we looked at earlier. Take a look at a Lambda architecture, which is a hybrid architecture. It's a really nice layout of managing high-speed, low-latency data coming in and real-time queries. I'm not going to go into too much detail about this because it's not really a deep technical discussion, but when we look at all the different available architectures, we think that a Lambda architecture makes sense in most cases. So in terms of a roadmap of next steps, right, what do we do in order to start adopting big data analytics? It's first to understand what the business goal is. So what are we trying to achieve? In order to do this, you need a stakeholder. You need somebody either in marketing or finance or in customer service or somewhere in the organization that's going to stand up and say, we want to leverage this technology because we want to improve same-store sales, or we want to improve customer service, or we want to improve operational efficiency. And then you can start to say, okay, well, if we're going to do that, what data can we get to support this? And my advice is not just to look internally. It's not just what data do we have, but what data do our suppliers have? Can our customers provide us? Can we track through the internet and social media? Whatever it might be, the thought process needs to be different than it has been traditionally. And then the last piece is, how are we going to display this, right? What dashboard are we going to use? What tools are we going to use to make this data consumable, right? It's great to have the data, to collect it, to validate it. It's all wonderful. Those companies that we work with, like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, those guys have more data than they can eat, right? Just millions and millions and millions and millions of records. But how do we both manage it and then display it in a way that's going to be useful for whatever the business case is, right? So it's the display tools. And lastly, it's really about iteration. One of the guys earlier today talked about an agile approach to managing projects in the cloud. And I think that applies especially when you think about big data analytics in the cloud. All right? So if we're going to try to accomplish something, don't try to boil the ocean initially. Right? Let's take a data extract, let's run some analytics on it, let's do visualization, review it with our stakeholders, and see if it's meeting our need. So our company, SoftServe, we are a software development provider. We do global software development with a focus on four specific vertical markets. We're in the retail space, we're in healthcare, we're in enterprise technology, and we're in a group called Emerging, essentially startups and some financial institutions there too. Now we provide user experience, customization services, mobile development, big data analytics, cloud architecture. We provide all those kind of services to clients. We've developed a reference model that we call Abiliton. People ask me what Abiliton means. It doesn't mean anything, but it is a word that we use to talk about our best practices. So to overcome some of the complexity in implementing big data projects, right? If you look at all the different components to it, we developed this model that talks about what roles you need to have. We look at these things across the dimensions of people, process, and technology. So one of the things that was tricky in moving to the web was that there was no role in the organization that was, the webmaster or somebody that managed, graphical user interfaces when it came to web design. Right? All those roles have to be created. Right? Who's responsible for the content on the website or the managing of the web application and those kinds of things? The same is even more true here. Right? Who's going to be our data steward? Who's going to actually own the quality of the data and make sure that whatever the single source of truth is defined and that we can normalize the data, et cetera. And so managing that through the different competencies is a big change and needs to be taken into account. And then the processes for managing the governance of the data models, et cetera, how are we going to work, what DevOps strategy we're going to employ, what automation tools and techniques are available. Let me go back, I'm sorry. And then the technologies. So we at SoftServe have created models, a reference model for what roles need to exist in an organization, what processes to follow, and then what technology architectures can be used as a starting point. This is an example of that model, where we take data from various sources, we look at data acquisition and storing, we look at real-time data processing, analytics, what are we going to use, what applications will consume that data, and then the data management layer of governance and security, quality, et cetera. So it's a really nice way to start looking at all the activities. I'm going to skip through these business cases, through these case studies, only because there's lots of examples that we saw today, and just in the interest of time. So to think about metrics for success, I would recommend that we look at both qualitative and quantitative metrics. If you're putting in a big data or data analytics initiative, there's qualitative data around hitting the business target. So if we've defined a business objective for this, right? How close are we coming to hitting that? Are we seeing same store sales increase? Are we seeing customer service increase, et cetera? And then from a quantitative perspective, what's the system performance? And what is the ROI that we're getting to this? And then, of course, managing compliance and data governance. So these three things are important qualities to consider when you're looking at implementing big data solution. So some point from now, 10 years? I'm saying about 10 years, right? We're going to be able to say, you know, remember life before big data or analytics or, you know, maybe it'll be called something else, personalization or something. And, you know, there was a group I was talking to last week. I was at Health 2.0 in San Jose, California. We were talking about big data and healthcare and technology in healthcare. And there was a really important statement that was made by one of the application vendors. And they said that we've designed our application for an audience of one, which is to say that every user has their own unique experience. And this is pretty far from our experience today, right? Today, all the applications we use are pretty generic. But not too far from now, the applications will reconfigure themselves and be customized and personalized for us as an individual. And ultimately, that's what we're all looking for, right? This will happen in healthcare. This will happen in the way that we shop and the way that we use applications. I don't know if any of you guys have gone through the experience of buying some complicated piece of personal consumer technology. I just went through trying to buy a gift for my father-in-law. I was turning 70 next week, and he wanted a new camera. So I was looking for a prosumer camera. The guy travels a lot, especially to Africa. You know, he was taking pictures of animals, fast-moving stuff, low-light situations. And you think you'd be able to put the parameters that you're looking for into a site, right? So I go to Amazon, place I go to all the time. I look at the top 10 prosumer cameras, but I can't find what I'm looking for, right? I want a viewfinder, I want a touchscreen, I want fast response and good lens, I want interchangeable lenses, and I want good low light shooting. You think you'd be able to select those things, right? You can't, right? You select the brand, the price, you can sort by rating, but you can't put your parameters in and tell it what you're looking for. So it took me, 50, 60, 70 hours of research looking at videos on YouTube and looking at DP, digital photographer review, and you know, bunches of different sites. But why is it that I can't just say, I'm looking for this thing, you know, tell me what the right product is? And think about Yelp, right? You guys Yelp users? You guys use Yelp, right? Pretty good product, right? It allows you to find a restaurant that you're looking for. But does it make recommendations based upon places that you looked at, visited, or rated? It doesn't. So that will change, and it will change hopefully soon, right? If you're a Yelp user and you've rated, you know, a bunch of different restaurants of different types, it should tell you, it should know that I like Asian food. I particularly like Japanese or Thai and spicy food, right? It should know the content. It should know me as an individual, and it will. Just some time, right? So at some point in time, not too far from now, I hope, certainly our kids will be able to look back and say, oh, I remember when, you know, Yelp was not personalized, right? I remember when TripAdvisor or Amazon or all this other stuff was generic. It didn't really understand me as a person, and now it does, right? And all of our devices will get there eventually. So with that said, I just want to thank you guys for sticking around. We'll have a panel here in a few minutes, but thank you very much.